This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Folks, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everyone of all ages, there's been a lot of Pats talk on here, but the OG of Pats talk on this podcast, who's also named Pat, hasn't given his opinion yet. And before I want to get into anything else, the one main thing I wanted to talk about right off the hop is that Jeff Howe, Elliott Wolf tackle talk that came up, because drafting a tackle in the first round isn't ideal, no, but I kind of compared it to, you know, when your kids want something sweet from the grocery store, but you got to buy the food that they don't exactly like the vegetables. It's kind of like the drafting a tackle and kind of like the eating your vegetables pick.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good, that's probably a pretty good way to put it, I think. Yeah.
You don't like it, but you need it.
Look, here's my big thing, right? You talk about value, right? And people get pissed about, you know, just as an example, people get pissed about the Cole Strange pick, right?
Yeah.
And what people get pissed about with the Cole Strange pick is that you don't take a guard at 29. And I agree with that. You don't take a tackle at 3. You don't. I'm sorry, you don't. Especially with 3 bona fide studs at quarterback and a generational wide receiver. You don't take a tackle at number 3 overall. And there, by the way, there are some pass rushers in there that I bet by the time the combine rolls around, we're going to be getting top 10 vibes from some of those guys as well.
Yeah.
Of course, the wide receivers you hear about, the quarterbacks you hear about, you don't hear about the edge rushers quite as much leading up to the draft. Of course, you know, outside of, you know, Will Anderson last year or whatever, but Dallas Turner is a great example. Dallas Turner is a guy that could sneak into the top 5. He could. Now, he may not. But he could, because those guys are super valuable. I'm not saying left tackle is not a super valuable position. It is. But you have Joe Walt and Olufoshinu.
Yep.
Those guys are awesome. They're awesome. They could start at left tackle for you for the next 10 years. But you don't draft them at 3. You don't do that. Not in a year like this. Now, if it's a year where, you know, there's no real super talent there, okay, fine. Joe Thomas gets drafted number 3 overall. There's not a ton of talent on the board, right? Jamarcus Russell, I think, went number 1 that year. But, like, you know, realistically, you know, as far as quarterback talent,
yeah,
there wasn't as much there, right? And so, but you don't draft a guy at 3 you can get at 8. That's stupid. That's just bad drafting. And so, you know, as much as I want them to go quarterback or wide receiver, that's what I want them to do. But, hey, they need a left tackle. Trent Brown ain't coming back. Right. And so, and even if he does, I don't know if I want him as my starting left tackle. So they need a left tackle. If you can get an elite left tackle, that helps you. But again, I'm not, you know, taking that guy with number 3.
Yeah. That's my thinking on it. It's like when I said the whole vegetables thing, like, yeah, it's like I meant like it's a thing they need, but it would be an ugly need. If they wanted this, because right now, I don't know if you saw who Washington's hiring as their offensive coordinator, that they're bringing in Cliff, which that's going to cause a whole schism now to where do you remember 2017 when San Francisco fleeced Chicago to swap 2 and 3?
Yeah.
That very well could happen if Washington gets too aggressive and they're like, we got to go get Caleb, because, you know, now that they have Cliff, signs are going to be starting pointing and being like, hey, we got to go up and get Caleb, because that can cause a schism then to where if the Bears are like, hey, we can move back from Caleb, keep Fields, get Marvin Harrison Jr., which then that opens the floodgates, because then the Patriots would have the run-of-the-mill pick, to which then even it could cause another schism of – it's just like a downward effect spiral to then where, say, if an Atlanta or a Vegas can creep down and then say, hey, we're going to give you this plus our like a first next year, kind of like what Houston and Arizona did for when Houston wanted to go out and get Will Anderson. So if they wanted to do something like that, to where now you look at a team like Arizona, who's at 4, also has a Houston's pick, New England can set themselves up well, because when I look at the Pats overall for 2024, I'm not going to be on here saying fringe playoff team, wild card hunt. I see them kind of like what the Bears did this past year, you know, where there's some growing pains out the gate. They get their shit together, but by the time they get it together, it's too little too late. But then we kind of have that 2025 optimism ahead for us. So it's a very fun time to be a football fan. And for as sad as it is, there's only one game left. This is the time of year where you start doing the whole what can happen or what could happen or very well react to the left field curveballs that might come in.
Yeah, look, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that could happen, right? And I think that, you know, the hiring of Kliff is interesting because that's where you look at it and say, is that a Caleb Williams move? And look, it might be that Chicago likes Drake May better. And I'm not saying that that's the case, but they might. They might like Jaden Daniels better.
Yeah.
I don't know. After what happened with Fields, I don't know if Jaden Daniels is the guy. But nevertheless, they might say, we're going to stick it out with Fields for another year, right? Yeah. And if that's the case, then sure. We'll give you one for number two and your second round pick and a third round pick next year or something like that. You know, because the thing is that the real thing, moving from two to three is one thing. Getting to one is a whole new ball game. It's a whole new ball game. Even if you're coming from two, it's going to be something close to a first round pick next year to get up to two. It doesn't matter where you are. It makes no difference because that's the way it works. And so, you know, I do think that you know, it's going to take a lot to get up there, but if that's what they want, they can do it. And the Bears can look at it and say, okay, we're going to take more guys. We're going to keep rolling these things over. And, oh, by the way, we have another top 10 pick this year. So, you know, we can take Marvin Harrison Jr. at two, or we could take Drake May at two, or we could take Marvin Harrison at two and then trade back into, you know, trade back at nine and, you know, take Michael Penix at 15 or whatever, right? So there's a lot of options. And I don't know where their head's at. And I mean, obviously the draft starts with Chicago, but like Chicago's got a lot of decisions to make, right? This isn't like when Trevor Lawrence came out and everyone in the world knew that Jackson was taking Trevor Lawrence. Everyone knew it. Now the draft starts at two. The draft doesn't start at two. It starts at one this year. And so that's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do. Of course, they've been tight-lipped about it, as they should. But I think that's – and then the dominoes kind of fall for the Patriots, where it's like, okay, if Caleb goes one and Harrison goes two, now you're like, well, we're not taking a wide receiver at three. We're not taking – you know, if they don't love May, they're not taking a quarterback at three. And so does that limit the people that want to trade up, right? I don't know, but that might limit the people that want to move up too. So it is kind of fascinating to look at. Look, if it's me personally, if I'm the Patriots, I'm either all in on a quarterback or, you know, in my last mock, I had them moving up to one to take Caleb Williams. But I know there's a lot of pushback. It's so funny. Caleb Williams is one of those interesting guys that, like, on the field, you don't see a lot of criticism about him. The guy can make plays. He's incredible throwing the ball. He's incredible. He does things that Mahomes does, right? That really kind of only Mahomes does. But off the field is where you get the things. Oh, he paints his nails and he was crying to his mom and, you know, he's not the leader and blah, 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 right? And then the backup quarterback scores a rushing touchdown in the bowl game. He's like, no, we're a team, you know, implying that like Caleb's not there. It just seems kind of silly, right? And so maybe that's the case and maybe he's not as good as people think he is. But my goodness, he's got all that talent, and that's what wins in the NFL right now.
Here's the thing. Talent like that doesn't come around all this often, so that's why I feel like, and if you're the Bears, I don't know if you trade Fields, because I feel like if you try to trade Justin Fields before the draft, it kind of gives the sign-off right away of what's going on. I think if you want to trade him, do the, you know, Friday before day two begins at like middle afternoon, find that team, trade, and then maybe you can get day two compensation. Because I know some people were saying you could get day one compensation for them, but I highly doubt that. Unless you find a stupid team that's in win now mode, like, you know, the like fake win now mode, kind of like what in Atlanta could be, you could try to do that. I also say that just because, you know, put in the air of the kid going back home. We always do that in sports.
Yeah.
But this whole draft is going to be very interesting just because of the dominoes that are going to fall. And like you said, it's not like, oh, hey, we know the first three are in lock. Like, we don't know. Like, Jaden Daniels could really surprise. Because here's the thing. For as good as college resume is, all these NFL people aren't going to look at stuff until what they see in the combine, what they see on interviews, and then what they see on pro day. So when you get those kind of mixtures going in, that's where we're going to find out really what's going to happen with this whole thing. And we still have 2.5 months to, you know, figure everything out.
That's crazy. It's just crazy. It's the never ending. You know, it's so funny because I'm looking at it and, it, you know, so Matt and I, my co-host Matt St. Jean and I are going back and forth on Pat's Pulpit every 2 weeks, every two Mondays, every second Monday, whatever. Every other week on Monday, we're releasing a mock draft. So I released my first mock last week. He did his 2 weeks before that. So this week we have no mock coming out. So next week, the Monday after the Super Bowl, he'll have his second mock out. And we'll do that until April, and then we'll do one every week. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, I'm ready to write another mock draft right now. And I'm like, I got like 3 weeks to like write another mock draft. I'm like, God dang, that's so long away. That's so far away. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. It's like February 4th. Like, it makes sense that it's that far away, right? So it's the 5th now. Or it's the 4th, right? Yeah, so, but it's like, you know, it's one of those things where like, I'm looking at it sitting there saying like, I'm ready to go already. The Super Bowl hasn't even happened yet. So, you know, those are the types of things for me that I'm like, all right, I get it, but I'm ready to go right this second. And that's a lot of Patriots fans forget that, like, we have free agency coming, which could change. And that's one of the things is that you get kind of that outlook as to what people are going to be looking at, right? We think the Patriots might take a quarterback at 3. Well, if they sign Kirk Cousins, that's not going to happen, obviously, right? I don't think that's going to happen, but they could, right? And then it's like, you know, okay, they want a wide receiver. What if they go out and sign, you know, T. Higgins and Michael Pittman Jr.? Well, now they're not drafting a wide receiver at 3 either. So, you know, so those are the types of things where it starts to – they show their hand a little bit based on what they do in free agency.
One other thing that I want to bring up, and I feel like this could happen. I'm not saying it will, but you could even get a dynamic where if you bring in the quarterback, say if you bring in Jaden Daniels and then – or Drake may even say, and then see if there's a friend of theirs, if there's a guy out there they really want, because we saw Stroud do this with Tank Dell, and I know a lot of people were like, oh, why give Stroud this much power? And now we kind of understand why, because even though he tore his Achilles, Tank Dell was having a phenomenal rookie season for the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. I was going to go into, you know, the pretty blunt details of this, but I actually have a TikTok that I saw from it's basically a guy who goes on and says like team's dream wish list. So I just want to play it for you and kind of see if you either agree or disagree or what you would change about what this it's called. I think it's called the Water Boys podcast. And basically what they think the Patriots should do this coming free agency.
Mac Jones, sign T. Higgins, Tyrod Taylor, and Justin Madubuike, Putt, J.C. Jackson, Lawrence Guy, and Daniel Ekwale. Restructure Juju Smith-Schuster, Devontae Parker, and Matthew Judon, and re-sign Mike Onwenu, Kyle Duggar, Kendrick Bourne, Josh Uche, Anthony Jennings, Miles Bryant, Trent Brown, Pharaoh Brown, Hunter Henry, and Mac Wilson.
Golly. That's a lot. So, here's what I would say. I would say I have no interest in bringing Trent Brown back. The Tyrod Taylor thing's fascinating. I don't think he could be your starting quarterback, but he could be a backup. I mean, if you're going to draft a guy like Jaden Daniels, it's not a terrible idea to have someone like Tyrod Taylor in front of him or even behind him to help him kind of grow. Tyrod Taylor is, you know, is a good veteran quarterback, I think. So I don't have a problem with that. Signing T. Higgins, again, the hard thing with Higgins is that I don't know if he's going to get wide receiver one money. I don't know if he's worth it. He might be worth it, but I don't know if he's worth it. Are we going after what we have right now, which is, you know, are we going after a high-end Devontae Parker? Is that what T. Higgins is high-end Devontae Parker? Does he not have a like? I feel like I never see T. Higgins wide open. I feel like he's always making contested catches. And that's great that he's good at that, but he's not creating a ton of separation. And so I'm like, well, that doesn't really help anyone, you know? And so I'm all set with guys that don't create separation. We've gone through this before. I'm all set with that. Like, yeah. You know, the rest of the stuff I think is interesting, right? I'd like, you know, obviously people know how I feel about Penny Jennings. Love that guy, right? Duggar needs to come back. Onwenu needs to come back. You have to restructure Judon. So the thing that a lot of people don't realize about Judon, and some people do, but some people don't, they gave him Stephon. What do you say?
His contract's also up after the end of this coming season.
It is, but they also they gave him the Stephon Gilmore treatment. And so what they did is they gave him extra money this year, but they took it out of his salary for next year. So he's making like $6 million next year or something like that. It's not enough. He's not going to want to play for that. And so you're going to have to restructure his deal if you want to keep him around. He is at the end of his contract, but still he's not getting paid almost nothing next year. And they did that intentionally to give him extra money this year, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to renegotiate that contract. They were not willing to do that with Stephon Gilmore, which is why they traded Gilmore for like a sixth round pick in 2027 to the Panthers. They got nothing back for Stephon Gilmore, which is ridiculous. But nevertheless, that same thing can happen to Matthew Judon if they're not willing to go to the table with him. To me, you know, and we could, who knows what Judon is on the field. To me, the way he was a leader in that locker room, the way he was around that team and still leading that team, even though he was hurt for the season, he is a guy you have to bring back just for culture and for leadership. You're losing that in Matthew Slater. You're almost definitely losing that in David Andrews. Like, you need guys like that around. And so I'm bringing Judon back basically no matter what, renegotiate his deal, give him a 3-year deal, you know, and kind of go from there. And then at the end of that deal, whatever, if he's overpaid, he's overpaid. It just is what it is. You know, you overpay for those guys. And by the way, they have a crap ton of money. So who cares if he's a little overpaid by the end of it?
That's the big thing with the, especially with the whole free agency thing this year. It's not like 2021, you know, where it's kind of like, oh, the cupboard's bare to an extent, but it's not completely bare where you can just go out and get people. They have a lot of in-house housekeeping to do. So that's why, and I want to say this as I'm watching the Grammys and I see our owner on the screen. Like everyone, they're showing a bunch of celebrities, and I'm just like, that's Robert Kraft. Sorry for the voice crack there. But that's just the thing. It's like, there's Robert Kraft. But with this year, there's so much in-house you have to do. Like that video, like the main pillars I look at is the Hunter Henrys, the Kendrick Bournes, who's another, I want to say, underrated culture setter within that locker room.
Yeah, agreed.
And then who's the other one I look at? Like when I see Farrell Brown, I'm like, I don't know. But the one name that really sticks out there that is very underrated because of how his season went is Mack Wilson. Because the linebacking core, it's good, not great. And Mack's a guy that you let him run in open space, he's going to hit you like a Mack truck.
Yeah, pun intended. I mean, look, I felt the same way. Mack Wilson, I'm like, why the hell are we bringing this guy back, right? He stunk. And they found that role for him this year. And the Patriots have done that for years. They've developed, you know, you go back to Akeem Ayers and, you know, Rob Ninkovich, obviously Mike Vrabel, but, you know, like, yeah, right. And there's a million guys they've done it with, right? And so you saw Mack Wilson take that step this year, which I think is great. So I'd like to have him back. One of the guys, and I forgot to mention this when you played that, but the Justin Madubuike was interesting because people are looking at it saying, well, the Patriots need so much help offensively, and they do. They need a ton of help offensively. They got to retool their entire offense.
Yeah.
But there's a real chance that Chris Jones and Justin Madubuike are both free agents this year. And I would just, like, I'm talking like a Santa sack full of money. Just give one of those guys, just fill a bag up with money and deliver it to their house. Because imagine – just imagine for a second, Matthew Judon, Keon White, Christian Barmore, and either Chris Jones or Justin Madubuike. Pick your poison there with whomever it is. Obviously, Jones, more talented, older. Madubuike, up and coming riser, and really was phenomenal this year as well. So it's like, you know, the name recognition's higher for Chris Jones, but Madubuike, I think, deserves to be in on that list as well. And so, getting one of those guys, now your front seven, you know, you bring back Mack Wilson, you hopefully develop Marte Mapu a little bit more. And if Keon White can take a step forward, and then, oh, by the way, you have Anthony Jennings still on the, you know, on the edge as well.
It's a cheaper contract though.
No, 100%. No, he's not getting paid a ton, because the thing about Jennings that I like is that he's a run stuffer. He's not really a pass rusher. He can rush the passer if he has to, but he's not really a great pass rusher. He's a run stuffer. But you need guys like that on your team. You have to have guys that can do that. He didn't just do it. He did it at an elite level this year. You know, and he missed two games, and he was like sixth in the NFL in tackles for loss. So, like, you know, it's an impressive year, really just stopping the run, but he's not going to get paid a ton because the guys that get paid are guys that can rush the passer, right? And so, especially the edge guys, you know, that get paid. So, you know, I look, I just think that that defensive front would be formidable. And then you go into the draft saying, we have a ton of flexibility. Sure, we have a need a corner that you're going to have to address at some point. You know, we don't need necessarily a number one guy, but you want to get something then. Okay. And so, but I think for me, I look at it and think, okay, you do that. You build the front seven, and now you can focus basically all on the offense in your draft. And if a guy falls to you that you're in love with, great, you can draft him if you want to, but you don't have to focus on the defense at all, and you can just focus on the offense and getting elite-level talent on the offensive side of the football and look at it and say, we're going to have a top 10 defense in the league. All we got to do, and this is why, you know, Matt and I had the Patriots winning 11 games this year. Matt, I think, had them winning 10. Because I thought, if they could get a well, – yeah, they obviously won four. I was a little bit – it was a little far off. But, you know, my thing was that if they can get to a top 15, if they could get be offense number 15, they'd win 10 or 11 games. And yeah, it showed out that way. If they could have been offense number 15, I think if they were offense number 20, that they probably would have been close to 10 wins. And they just couldn't get anything going offensively. And so if you can continue to build that defense, there's been a ton of continuity over there. And so I'm hoping that it will be similar. I don't think it'll be as good, but I'm hoping it'll be similar to what it was last year. You could, you know, not that they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but you could make some noise next year with a mediocre offense.
Play spoiler down the road, be that like 7 to 8 win team. And I know a lot of people say that now to where it's like, oh, look at how far Patriot fans have come. And we're like, yeah, we know once Tom left and now that Bill's gone, which we're going to get to. Yep. It's this matter of just not basically being in that sense of like NFL relevancy to where it's like, yeah, we now get what everyone else was feeling for all those years we were on top. And obviously now there's a new team on top, which again, that's what it's going to end the show. But it's just be realistic. Like as long as they have a team that can give me hope every Sunday that they're in the game or they can win, that's, you know, what I've kind of been asking for ever since the 2020 season. It's just one of those things where you want to go up there and kind of see it. One other point I want to make on Mac Wilson, though, quickly before we pivot.
Yeah.
Is a few weeks ago, myself, McGarvin were talking, and we also had New England reporter Sophie Weller from A to Z Sports on, who, by the way, will be on with me tomorrow night. And her thing was that she's with great. The new coaching hire, yeah, she's a fantastic reporter. She was basically telling us how Trent Brown and Mac Wilson have been two of the bigger social media candidates for promoting Mayo. So I feel like they're the kind of guys to where they see the coach that they want to play for and they'll take the discount. Now with Trent Brown, like I said, I think it's a coin flip to whether he stays or goes. I think it just depends on how much he'd want to stay for. But if there's another team that throws a sack of money at him for reasons unbeknownst to me, then I think he's out the door. That's just the point I wanted to make about that.
I agree with you on that. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, speaking of the Grammys, did you see T-Swift?
I did. I saw her win, and as I also saw a new album coming out in April, which, and after, because after her flight schedule, like for the next few weeks, again, they keep showing Robert Kraft like right behind Beyonce. Yeah. This man is everywhere.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, like I'm pretty sure he's at their table, which is.
He might be. It wouldn't surprise me. He's buddies with all those, you know, Meek Mill and those people. And so he's gotten close with a lot of the rappers. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he was sitting with Jay-Z.
It's like one of those things with the rappers. It's like the Sesame Street song. One of these things just doesn't belong here. It's the old man in the corner. Speaking of old man, obviously today the Boston Globe, Bill Belichick took in a full page ad to thank the fans. Mm-hmm. Some people have asked me about it because, like, not the ads, but just everything in general. It's where some people look at it as a sense of, oh, but why would you let him go? Or, oh, all this stuff. Where I feel like people right. outside the organization look at it from both standpoints, where it was like all season long, oh, he's terrible, he's this. But then when you let him go, it says, why'd you let him go? But right. at the end of the day, we knew it's what was best for the organization. I remember as soon as I woke up on that Thursday and I saw that joint press conference thing, clicked in my mind immediately. I was just like, well, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what they did was, I like, look, you interviewed the man that's behind the documentary we get to see in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to say this right now before I let you talk. I'm going to urge all, and I've read, because I say this too, because I've read the book.
Yeah.
If you are a fan of this team, or if you want to know the true inner workings, even if you're a rival, I'm looking at people who in Bills Mafia and Dolphins and Jets fans specifically. If you want to know the true inner workings of what went down for 20 years, please watch the documentary on February 16th, because I think unlike the Gators one from August, We're going to get a lot. I honestly think I still have to listen to your interview with the producer from the Dynasty, but I honestly think I think it's going to be like everything's just Noel's bar.
It was phenomenal. And I've watched the whole thing. Yeah. It's incredible. And so they gave me an advanced copy, which is pretty dope. I had to like sign in. It's crazy. I had to sign into this thing. It was like four steps to sign in. And then there was a watermark of my name on it as I was watching it. So then that way, if I like screen recorded or do something like that and I put it out, then everyone can see who did it. Right. So
100 lawyers come knocking at your door.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, but it was fantastic. It was fantastic. And I will say one of the questions I asked him was, you know, are you surprised just how honest and forthcoming Robert Kraft was? Robert Kraft was incredibly forthcoming and incredibly honest. And I just thought that was something that I wasn't necessarily expecting. They have almost a full episode on the Aaron Hernandez stuff. And they have, you know, he gets into Deflategate. And one thing I said to him was that I think they handled Deflategate and Spygate correctly, because Patriots fans are going to be pissed when they're watching it with how it's portrayed. But then non-Patriots fans are also going to be pissed about how it was portrayed. So it's like he found that perfect balance of like, yeah, we want to talk about it, but like, let's be serious here. Like, this is really what it was. It's not, you know, so it's just it's really interesting. And so it was incredibly well done. But you do get a chance to really see kind of the back. Here's what happened for, you know, 25 years or whatever. And it's interesting. And they make a lot of parallels that, put it this way, there's a lot of things that I learned that I didn't know. And there's a lot of connections that were made that I was like, oh, I guess I hadn't really thought about that before. And I guess that makes sense, that would have, you know, changed his opinion on this or whatever. So it is well worth your time. If you're not paying the $6 a month or whatever it is for Apple Plus, do it. And then, you know, even so, I think what they're doing is they're doing it over 5 weeks. They're doing like two episodes a week for 5 weeks. But wait until week two or three, and then they usually will give you like a month free trial or something like that, or even a 2 week free trial. And then, you know, and you can just binge it all at one time. So, but it is well worth your time. And like I say, I learned, I mean, I've been following the Patriots forever. I've had season tickets since the year 2000, which is when it starts. And I learned things that I didn't know either. So, So it's well worth your time. And I think that's really, for me, like, it's the inner workings, like you said, that really kind of set it apart from other things.
Okay. So there's three things I'm glad about there. One, that you didn't spoil anything, that we kind of know, like, the obvious things of what they would go into. Two, a little disappointed on the fact that it's not all released at once. I thought for sure it'd be like a 10 episode binge, and I was fully prepared to do that. Actually, fun fact, Pat's one of the only podcast people to have met my fiance. So to binge it with her and I, because I fully had that planned for February 16th. And it's pretty much just kind of that like sense of going into now where I know I feel like I'm going to be happy about it.
Yeah,
but also too, guys, here on the podcast, we are going to be I have something in the works right now where we'll kind of break down episode by episode, like once they come out. But now that I know, hey, it's over here, we don't have to do it all at once. So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
But anyway, we didn't talk about it too much, but the just a quick little stint. I want to, because we have a lot to talk about still.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick. Do you stand on it where I stand on it? Or is it just because I've seen a lot of weird people. Like I had to mute some guy on Twitter. I think his name was like Patrick Pass or something like that, where a lot of the anti-Kraft, pro-Belichick people were coming out of the woodwork the second all this stuff happened.
Well, so there's two parts of it, right? There's two parts of it. There are people that are anti-Kraft and pro-Belichick. There are people that are pro-Kraft and anti-Belichick. There are people that are pro-Brady and anti-Belichick. There are people that are anti – there's really no one that's anti-Brady and pro-Belichick, but – but what's happened is that a lot of people have a very short memory, right? And so they say things like, Bill Belichick's a terrible GM. Bill Belichick's a terrible coach. It was all Brady. It was none about, and that type of stuff infuriates me, which is why I wanted Belichick to get a job this year and win, because yes,
people up,
and that's it. And look, the GM skills. There's no debate. The GM skills have suffered in the last few years. Absolutely, that is absolutely true, right? And so, you know, supposedly the word was that, you know, Belichick went into the 2022 draft saying we're drafting Cole Strange in the first round. That's it. And so, like, that's obviously stupid, right? We understand that. There was no reason to trade Shaq Mason away. There was no reason to let Ted Karras walk for a medium-level salary when you could have signed one of those guys and then drafted someone else in the first round. There's no reason to do that, right? And so I understand the frustration from people. Now, look, I will say I like Trent McDuffie a lot. He's a very good player for the Chiefs. But if you draft Trent McDuffie there, you don't draft Marcus Jones at 85, who I love. And you don't draft Christian Gonzalez at 17 the next year. Yep, that's right. And you don't draft Christian Gonzalez at 17 the next year. So, you know, would I rather have Trent McDuffie and nobody else? Or would I rather have, you know, and maybe would have tried someone else later or whatever, but I would rather have Marcus Jones and Christian Gonzalez. Now, both those guys were hurt this year. And so maybe that's an ongoing issue that we're going to have with both those guys. And I don't know the answer. I don't know that for a fact, right? But theoretically, on paper, I'd rather have Marcus Jones and Christian Gonzalez, right? And so, whatever, we can go back and forth, but like, it becomes one of those issues where it's like, yeah, okay, he definitely struggled at the end of his career. Then again, somebody released it the other day and said, you know, since the year 2000, the Patriots have the most players that they've drafted that have become all pros, first team all pros. Now, that's not total. That's not total all pros. That is players. The Patriots have had 17 players that they have drafted since the year 2000 become all pro players. And look, there'll be people like, well, some of them are like Matthew Slater and Gunnar. I don't care. I don't care who they are. Because if it was easy to get a special teams guy as a pro bowler or as an all pro, then everyone would do it. But they don't. And so that's the thing for me is like, you know, they still do a pretty good job drafting. Now, Belichick has missed on receivers. Absolutely. He's missed on receivers. He's missed on corners in the past, right? And, you know, I think in the last few years in general, he's had a hard time. Last year seems to be a very good draft. 2022, not so much. 2021, you know, it's still up for debate in 2021. We'll see. Ramondre Stevenson looks to be a solid back. But then you get into some of the other guys and you're like, okay, Mac Jones didn't really work out. And obviously Tyquan Thornton, you know, was 2022. But still, it's like, you know, you start looking at it and saying, okay, there's been a lot of misses too, right? So, you know, fine. But here's the bottom line. Bill Belichick, in my opinion, is the greatest coach of all time and the greatest GM of all time. And what I really don't like about Kraft that I've seen from him is that they've backtracked on some stuff. Well, you know, Bill wasn't fully in charge until 05. Yeah, just so we know, just don't worry. Well, wait a second. Well, we've been told that Bill was in charge the whole time. And now all of a sudden you're trying to take that away from him? You're trying to take that unbelievable offseason, arguably the greatest offseason in the history of football in 2001. With all of the free agents that they signed, they drafted Matt Light, they drafted Richard Seymour, they drafted – incredible. It's one of the best offseasons ever. And you're taking that away from him now? And you're saying, well, it wasn't all him. It's like, come on. Like, that, you know, it just felt very disingenuous from Kraft that, like, on his way out, he's like, oh, by the way, all that great stuff that happened wasn't all Bill. Like, let's not give him credit for everything. And that just kind of – that rubbed me the wrong way.
I think it's more just because it's obviously different with Tom, where that was like a father-son relationship. This right. is the true, you know, how everyone says divorce. This is the true ugly divorce that give it like 3 years where Bill will get his roses. We all know he's going to get a red jacket. He'll get a gold jacket. He'll probably get a bronze statue, maybe somewhere near the new big lighthouse and all that fun stuff. So that's what everything there reminded me of. But even still, too, and the fact that he let teammates Lawyer Molloy walk because he had faith in Rodney Harrison, just little things like that to where, you know, it's not about what ingredients make the cake as long as the cake is made and it tastes good. And guess what? The cake that was made won another five Super Bowls after 2001.
Yes.
This wasn't going to say too. The only thing I find weird with the whole craft, like, I don't have a problem. Like, the pittiness doesn't really bother me to an extent. Like, it doesn't affect my life. It's more or less the people that are coming out of the woodwork now saying that, oh, you know, Jonathan Kraft, one day he's going to take over this team, and he's going to ruin it, he's going to run into the ground. I'm just like, where does all this Jonathan Kraft's this prevalent figure, you know, where it's like the Greg Bedards or the Tom Kernans of the world, where now all of a sudden, instead of having Robert Kraft as their puppet, it's Jonathan Kraft, or instead of like, oh, these guys do this, it's just that. It's like, I feel like a lot of these people just can't get a grip on things, so they're always trying to find someone new to blame when it comes to the Patriots organization.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're right. And that's, look, Robert Kraft's playing PR, right? He's playing PR. And that's, and we all knew he would do that. But, you know, and you talk about someone to blame,
James.
Right? But you talk about someone to blame. And this is really the thing. Kraft's hid behind Belichick this whole time. Right? He's always said the checkbooks are open.
Yeah.
The checkbooks are open for Robert Kraft. For Bill Belichick, I'm sorry. Checkbooks are open. So he can spend whatever he wants to spend. Well, now we're going to really get to know. We're really going to find out who controls, who makes that final decision. Did Bill Belichick want to spend more money on guys and couldn't because of Robert Kraft? Did he have to kind of, you know, because everyone always gave them crap for the way that things were written and the way that incentives were given. And so was that Belichick playing with numbers because he needed to get under a certain threshold for Robert Kraft? We don't know the answer to that question. We're going to find out in the next few years. He can't hide behind Belichick anymore. He can't scapegoat Belichick for that. So those are the things for me where it's like, okay, that's okay. That's fine. But there's a reason that Belichick has done that forever. You have not unlimited money, obviously, but you have a lot of money in the NFL. You can pretty much spend on it whatever you want to spend it on. There's a reason that he, you know, has manipulated it and gone with lower end guys. There was a reason for that. And the reason is because they don't want to spend the money. They don't. And Robert Kraft can blame Belichick and say he didn't want to spend the money. But again, now Belichick's gone, he can't hide behind him. So that's kind of where I stand, and I'm excited to kind of see where that goes from there.
I am too. I'm very excited to see where everything goes from here. Obviously, I believe I'm excited for Gerard Mayo. I believe you are too.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm excited about is special teams. I want to wait and see because I know the Rams special teams wasn't ideal this year. Defensive coordinator, I've seen some people from outside of the Patriots fan base being like, oh, it's just same old Patriots. No. DeMarcus Covington is a well-deserved promotion from within. The one where I'm most excited to see is what Alex Van Pelt does. And also, too, they bring in Ben McAdoo. I know a lot of people go, oh, but Ben McAdoo is a bad head coach. Just because you're a bad head coach doesn't mean you know football. It just means that, look, we see it in every sport, mainly football and hockey, to an extent basketball, but not so much, where you see these guys who get head coaching opportunities, doesn't work out, and they kind of quietly go away and do their thing. You want a prevalent example of a guy who didn't work as a head coach, but he's been a phenomenal coordinator? Look at the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, who very well could be on his way to winning his fourth Super Bowl next Sunday night. So just something I wanted to point out there. Just if you want to give your thoughts too with everything, Mayo, blanking on the special teams coordinator's name, but Van Pelt and Covington, I like the way the staff's set up right now.
I agree. Yeah, Jeremy Springer. I always think of him as Jerry Springer. That's the only reason I remember it. But Jeremy Springer, we'll see kind of how that works. I mean, I thought it was crappy last year, so like – I feel like it'll be an improvement, kind of whatever it is. I feel like we'll be an improvement this year. But, you know,
it's
look.
I got Cord. That's all I know. I don't care about.
Yeah, right. And this is, you know, I'm not 100% sure where we're going with it. I think what we needed was a reset on offense.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't need Josh McDaniels back. I didn't want the same Perkins Earhart offense. I didn't want it. And part of the reason is that you're playing, in my opinion, you're playing on you know, max hard level, right? You're playing on all Madden level when you could be playing on pro, and it's just fine, right? And I think you're asking the receivers to know everything, and you don't need the receivers to know everything. And so, look, I think that, you know, We'll see how Alex Van Pelt does. He's never really called plays before. And so people are like, oh, but he's a... Zach Robinson never really called plays before. I mean, all these guys that we wanted, Nick Kaylee's never called plays before. So all these guys that were like, oh, we want to, they've never called plays before either. So it's not like, it's not as though we're getting, you know, the options were, you know, someone that's going to be different and an experienced play caller. There was no guys like that available, right? And so Van Pelt's a little bit older than some of the guys that you had an opportunity at, but he's never really had this chance to be the guy as the offensive coordinator calling plays. He's offensive coordinator in Cleveland, but he wasn't calling plays. Mm-hmm. And so now he has the opportunity to do both, right? And I think it's a good opportunity for him. You bring McAdoo in as kind of an offensive consultant, which, again, Ben McAdoo's not a sexy name. He's not a guy that I'm super excited about.
No.
But he's a good coach. And I think that if he's just sticking to the offensive side of the football and he's not even your offensive coordinator, he's just kind of there to help, I think that's not a bad thing, right? And so you get a guy that has experience as being an offensive coordinator. Sure, you get a guy with head coaching experience as well that can help out with your OC. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. And again, like I said, you needed a full reset. A full reset you needed, and that's what they got. Defensively, you didn't want a full reset, right? You wanted to kind of keep the status quo. And I think it makes sense to promote DeMarcus Covington. He's a guy that a lot of people like. He's well respected. He was, I think, the head coach of one of the Senior Bowl teams last year, right? So, like,
yeah,
he's a guy that is respected in the league. He's an up and coming guy. Maybe he's your DC for a few years, and then next thing you know, he's a head coach somewhere else, and you're getting a third round pick because he, you know, it becomes a head coach somewhere else. I think that would be great. And if he does a good job as defensive coordinator, I wouldn't be surprised if that was in his future. But again, it's culture, guys. And I think that's one of the reasons they loved Van Pelt, is because everything you hear about Van Pelt is culture, culture, culture. You hear that word all the time related to him. And that's what Mayo's trying to build, is that culture, is that, you know, rapport with the players. And that's – Covington was huge on that. And Van Pelt, from the sounds of it, is huge on that as well. And I think that's, you know, if that's the only thing we get out of this year – then it is what it is. And look, if we win four games again next year, which I don't think they will,
no.
But if you win four games again next year, so be it. But if you start to see your young players playing better, if you get a young quarterback and he starts to progress as the year goes along, if you get, you know, hopefully you get a young wide receiver or two and they progress, those are the things you're looking for, right? And so, and look, will all the hires be a slam dunk? Probably not, but you never know. You know, and at the very least, I like that they're doing something different, right? Alex Van Pelt was a guy that came out of nowhere. Nobody expected him. He wasn't a hot commodity. He might be a good offensive coordinator. We just don't know that yet. And so I like the fact that they went with guys that they're confident with, and, you know, we'll just see how the pieces land from there.
The way I also look at it too, with everything, especially in division right now, is the division's in a very peculiar spot. We don't know what the Jets are going to be. And the Dolphins and the Bills, unless something changes, they're very status quo at the moment, to where it's like you're going to be good in the regular season. But look, I would rather be in our position than where Buffalo is right now. And I know everyone's going to go, oh, but the Bills are this and this. Yeah, but the Bills have a wide receiver, one who doesn't show up when the light shine brightest. And for 3 years in a row, you've got knocked down in the divisional round twice to Kansas City. So with a team like New England, it's kind of like, possibilities are endless. I was thinking about the wide receiver thing because there's two names in free agency. Obviously, T. Higgins is like a thing there, but like if we don't get him, it's not going to be the end of the world. Two names I want to give you. One name, because I really like the guy, and that's Michael Pittman Jr. Another one is a name. It's not sexy. It's not flashy. He had a really bad moment towards the end of the season this year. Darnell Mooney, just to come in to kind of be what we thought Tyquan was going to be. You know, you put him in the X, you put him in that, like, route runner position, to where he's not always going to be flashy, but he's a guy that, you know what, hey, he's a little bit cheaper, but he can be effective when you need him to be.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea of Mooney if he's, you know, if he's, like, far down your depth chart. I freaking love Michael Pittman. I've loved that man for multiple years.
Favorite receiver.
He's fantastic. He's so much fun.
Yeah.
And he's a really good player. And so I think the Colts would be stupid to let him walk. You have a second-year quarterback. You need to keep that guy. But if he somehow becomes available, I think the Patriots need to do everything they can to bring that guy in. I would prefer him over T. Higgins, in my opinion. But again, you know, I wouldn't hate Mooney as a depth guy. You know, he's a depth piece for you as your, you know, fourth receiver or something like that. You know, Kendrick Bourne said that he wants to come back to the Patriots. I think they'd be dumb to let him walk. I think he's a culture guy. Like, I think you pointed that out, that he's a culture guy. Like, you know, I want Kendrick Bourne back on this team. And so if you're rolling out Pittman, KB, Pop Douglas, and, you know, even if it's Mooney or whatever, you know, and then Juju is somewhere in there and maybe Devontae Parker, I think you should let him go. But nevertheless,
Wilson.
Right. You know, yeah, well, yeah, you never know. So there's a guy that I like. Lab McConkey too, of course. But there's a guy that I have a, as you may know, I do a my guy this year, every year.
One a few years ago, Jones.
It was this guy. Marcus Nick Jones.
Bolton, very prevalent player.
Nick Bolton, yes, love Nick Bolton. And then last year was Emmanuel Forbes. And Forbes didn't have a great year in Washington, but did get drafted 16th overall. So this guy won't get drafted 16th overall, but I am very excited. I'm not gonna tease it a little bit. I'm not gonna tell you the name just yet, but it's a name you've heard, and I will tell you Keegan freaking loves this guy. So so I was back and forth between like two or three different guys, and I was talking to Keegan and he kind of swayed me in that direction. And so anyways, but I do have a wide receiver that I love this year that I'm hoping they draft, you know, in that late second round, maybe even early third, depending on where he goes. But anyways, but I think, you know, you roll that out with a rookie in there somewhere, and all of a sudden your wide receiving corps is pretty good. You know, like you get that guy. And the biggest thing for me is that what the Patriots have had for multiple years, they've had the twos. They haven't had the one. Right, even when you had Jacoby Myers as your number one wide receiver, that's stupid. Jacoby Myers goes to Vegas and he's great. Why? Because he has Devontae Adams on the other side.
Yeah.
If he's the number two wide receiver, you're doing good, right? When Kendrick Bourne's your two or three, you're doing really good with that, right? If KB's your wide receiver one, you're in trouble. If Devontae Parker's your wide receiver one, you're in trouble. You know, but if he's your wide receiver two, wide receiver three, you can deal with that, right? And that's the situation they've been in, and so hopefully they can get that legit stud wide receiver one and then build it out from there.
That's just it. I was looking up quickly just through PFF, by the way, yeah. Cap numbers. So okay. My Pittman, like I said, when I said a podcast favorite receiver, because ever since 2020, me and my friends have come on here. We've all loved Michael Pittman. We always call him the podcast favorite receiver. The unfortunate situation is that the Colts are behind the Patriots for cap space. This one's weird. It's showing this was updated January 22nd, but it's showing Commanders, Titans, Texans, Patriots, Colts as the top five for cap. I don't know where the Bears kind of fell down there, but
yep.
The Colts at $62 million. The other noteworthy thing of the Pats this year is they only have $7 million in dead money, which is not terrible. The Miami Dolphins have $24 million in – actually, that's the Chargers. The Chargers have $24 million in dead space and are 45 over, and the Dolphins are 51 over the cap and have $10 million in dead space with probably some people to cut. So that's where I get the whole Bills, because the Bills, too, their cap situation is not pretty, but I'm sure I'll talk to Greg sometime between now and free agency, and he'll do numbers and math, and everything will go up in the air that way.
Yeah.
The wide receiver core for this team, like, look – even tight end, too. Like, I don't want them to go out and spend money in free agency because they have I think Hunter Henry could be a cheap in-house option. Like, you know, yeah. Like, you keep him.
He should be back next year. Yeah.
Gesicki, I don't think, will be back.
No.
I know he'll say all those things like, oh, you know, I'll be back. I don't see a world he comes back. And Farrell is only – I can be like, if he signs for, like, you know, a $2 to $3 million deal. Like,
yeah, he's not getting paid a lot of money from anyone, no. I don't think, you know, but I think you keep him around. Why not, you know?
Yeah. Where are we going to go next? We got a lot to talk about. Ultimately, with the quarterback situation, if you had to pick your dream quarterback room, what would it be for 2024? Because do you want me to do mine first or do you want me to go after you?
Yeah, do it.
My ideal one is a rookie you draft. One of the two former members of the Wolfpack, and now everyone's going, oh, you're crazy. Both guys are going to come back on veteran minimum deals.
Yep.
You can get both on cheap deals. And for QB3, I think you keep Zappe. I think you keep Bailey Zappe as QB3 because that's what he is. And for the one game where we play the Cincinnati Bengals, you let him go and they win the game miraculously because for some reason when he plays the AFC North, Bailey Zappe turns into Joe Montana. It's just,
yeah.
Look at me, look at the stats. Pat was at the game this year where it happened.
It's quite true. It's quite true. Yeah, he was unbelievable that first half. Looked terrible in the second half, but he had done enough in the first half that it didn't matter. Yeah, Jacoby Brissett's on my list, 100%. I want Jacoby back. I think he's a great wide receiver, great QB2. I think he's a leader. The guys love him. He, you know, he's a guy you want around. And so to me, Jacoby Brissett's back, I hope at least. And Van Pelt's worked with him before. And so it makes sense that he would come back. And so I love Brissett. I love the idea of drafting a guy. And look, if that guy doesn't come at three, maybe it's Michael Penix in the second round. Maybe it's Michael Penix at the end of the first round. Maybe it's Spencer Rattler in the third round. You know what I mean? Like, so give me a guy. Maybe it's Joe Milton in the fourth or fifth round. I don't love Joe Milton.
He's not having a Senior Bowl.
No, you know what's funny is about Joe Milton is that he practices really well. He's really good in practice. And then he gets out in the game and he's terrible. And this same thing, I think, happened to Mac Jones, where, like, Mac Jones is good in practice and knows what he's doing. Then once the live bullets fly in, he's like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do that. And so, you know, it's like you know, I'm playing Call of Duty, which I don't play Call of Duty. But some kid playing Call of Duty, and he's great at it. And then you stick him in real warfare. It's like, well, he's probably not going to do that well, right? And so, like, and so that's the thing. Like, it's obviously very, very different. But, like, in practice, you're not getting hit. There's no real pressure in practice. You don't really have to worry about things in practice.
Yeah.
In the game, things are sped up. You're getting hit. There are guys at your ankles. There are guys at your feet. You got to worry about those things. And so, like, there's a million things flying through your head at once. Whereas in practice, it's not the case. And so, you know, I think that to me is who Joe Milton is. It's what I've heard from people at Tennessee. I tweeted out something that I wouldn't hate Joe Milton later, and I got a text from my buddy – or DM from my buddy. He's like, dude, in no world do you want Joe Milton as your quarterback. He's a Tennessee fan. And he's like, you can't. You don't want that guy. So, you know, and I will trust him over me. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And so, you know, look, I think Rattler has some high-end talent. Will he ever reach that potential? I don't know. But in the third round, it's worth taking a chance. I think it's worth taking a chance if you get a wide receiver. Imagine they get a left tackle and a wide receiver in the first two rounds. Pick up some extra draft capital and draft Spencer Rattler at the end of the second or beginning of the third round. And now all of a sudden you got, you know, a quarterback with top end talent that, you know, top end potential, I guess I should say, a wide receiver that could potentially be a wide receiver one or a high end wide receiver two and a starting left tackle. I mean, like, what else do you want? You know,
that's just it. Like, cause for as much as Jaden Daniels is there, for as much as Drake May is there, there's only really two quarterbacks besides now Joe Milton that I've always been on my do not draft list. One is Bo Nix, which Keegan got me on years ago when we thought Bo Nix was going to come out of school.
Yeah.
The other is J.J. McCarthy. Now, I know everyone's going to go, oh, we won a national champion. Oh, we did this. J.J. McCarthy is kind of
Matt's displeased with you.
It's like Taysom Hill, but without the muscle power, in my opinion. Like, unless he's on a team with, like, a very dominant offensive line and, you know, he's got a horse running back, it's kind of like a Daniel Jones 2.0, in my opinion, of what it can be in the NFL.
Well, look, here's my thing, right? And let's just be honest. They won the national championship. He threw 10 times. And then we sit there and say, well, they didn't have any receivers. Well, Roman Wilson looks like a stud in the Senior Bowl. So what do you mean?
Early debut pick, probably.
You know, and so that's the thing. Yes, he doesn't have Marvin Harrison Jr. on his team. Fine. But he's got decent enough players, right, that he can throw the ball a little bit. I mean, USC's got just as good wide receivers as, you know, as Michigan did, right? Like, I mean, so that's how I look at it and just say, like, all right, like, I get it. But it's not like he has a bunch of bums playing with him, you know? So – you know, I just a guy that you don't trust to throw the ball. I don't know how I feel about that. Now, you want to tell me we can draft him in the third round and you feel like, okay, he's a leader and blah, 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 whatever. You can talk me into it, I guess. But, like, I still don't – I'm not excited about it, right? And I don't think anyone should be excited about it. And so – and he's not going in the third round, by the way. He's going at, like, the end of the first. And I'm like, I got no – I have no interest in that at all, right? I'd rather have Michael Penix. I don't really want Michael Penix, but I'd rather, you know, if you tell me I got to choose J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix at pick 26, let's say, Patriots straight up from 34, they get up to 26, they're either going to draft Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy, and those are the choices. I'm taking Michael Penix every time, right? And so, you know, we'll see where it goes, but I just yeah, I'm with you on that. And Bo Nix, man, get the hell out of here, Bo Nix. I know, yeah, okay, play great in the season and 70% completion percentage and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Please don't draft Bo Nix.
We've seen it before. Like it was Keegan who literally tweeted this out where it's like Sam Darnold, Mitch Trubisky. It's gonna be another one of those quarterbacks where you're gonna take Bo Nix and then there's gonna be buyer's remorse about it to where, you know, he's that second stringer probably for most of his career. The one thing I'll say right now, because there's Joneses and I love to talk about both of these guys equally.
Yeah.
Look, we all know that Mac is on to greener pastures now where he'll probably be somewhere else next year, get a new start. I know there's people talking about the whole, oh, we might get a second chance. I'm just like, no, it's broken beyond repair. But I'd rather be in our situation because Knicks and the Giants, for some reason, there's been a name that's been coming up, and I'd rather have a situation with the Patriots where you know you need a quarterback. You know, with the Giants, you know you need a quarterback, but you paid the quarterback you need to get rid of so much money to where getting a quarterback just creates more dysfunction than what's already there. So if you're a team like the Giants, that's where a Joe Alt, I keep forgetting his name from Penn State just because I don't
want to.
Fashanu. Or Malik Nabers fits the bill for them. But that's not, this isn't a Giants podcast. This is mainly
podcast. But I'm with you, though. I agree with you on that. And the Giants made the mistake of paying Daniel Jones when he made the playoffs. So it didn't make any sense to do that. And so they did. They gave him this massive contract, and they're regretting it.
Yep. There's two players that are going to be available because there's two players available day two, day three that I'm really eyeing at the moment. And one has been Jalen McMillan from Washington, the wide receiver.
Okay. Yep.
The other one's come up on my radar because of the Senior Bowl, but Max Melton from Rutgers, the safety. Because, you know, Patriots and Rutgers, there's a pretty good connection there. You can kind of dot the I's and cross the T's on that one. So it's players like that, or even to like the Ladd McConkey, that's the, you know, the luxury pick. Like, oh, we'd love to have him, but I don't think we'll get him. And then the other one is the tight end from Kansas State.
Yes, Ben Sinnott.
He
was in my mock draft last week.
Ooh, because like he'll be there on day three, and we've seen like, and I just don't want people like say if they draft him, everyone's gonna go, oh, they got Sam Laporta, and I'm like, look, they kind of hit like Sam Laporta is kind of like getting lightning in a bottle. This is more like a Dawson Knox to where like your rookie year they're not gonna see much, but second year if you know quarterback and him are clicking, it's gonna be that hey, we got something here, or kind of like even what we saw with Dalton Kincaid, where there's the baby steps of. You can develop this player in the right direction. He's going to be a great asset for you for years to come.
Yeah. No, and that's – yeah, I like Sinnott a lot. He kind of is that he's not – he's different. He's a different kind of guy than those guys. But he does definitely have some high-end traits, I think. Yep. You are banking a little bit just on the athleticism. You haven't seen a ton of it in college. You saw some of it in college, but not a ton of it in college. K-State doesn't really use him like that. But – you know, I do like him quite a bit. Like I said, I had him in my latest mock draft, and I think he has the potential to develop into a guy like that. He's not going to be Sam Laporta year one making the Pro Bowl, right? But you know, he has potential to develop into a guy like a George Kittle. Not as good as George Kittle, but a guy like that. He's a very good blocker, and he can go out and catch the ball. To me, those are the types of guys you want on your team because first year he can block. And then you say, okay, well, you're going to block, and then you're going to go and get some passes too, you know? And so, and then you kind of mix it up as you go. So I like Sinnott a lot. I think he's a really good target in that, you know, early day three range, you know, and see if you can build something there.
One player I want to ask you about before we head out, if you're the Patriots, do you bring back Zeke or do you let him walk?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with Zeke coming back. I don't know if he's going to want to come back. You know, he may want to go somewhere that he's got a legitimate chance to be like on a good team with, you know, fighting for a playoff spot and a championship and so on and so forth. But I think he was a great guy in the locker room. I liked Zeke a lot. I think he busted his ass this year. And he showed that he's got a little bit of, he's got a little bit of juice left. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he got a decent contract from, you know, a team that is competing for a championship, right? And so I don't know if it'll be Buffalo, but like a place like Buffalo would be an interesting spot for him, where he can be kind of that number two guy to your, you know, your number one running back. And you could say, okay, you know, I feel good about what he can do in this type of offense, running the ball. And by the way, he really, really did a nice job catching the ball into the backfield too, which he's always been good at. But, you know, I think he still, he showed that he's got some of those skills left. And so I think from the Patriots, I'd be interested in bringing him back at the right price. But I think for him, he probably wants to go somewhere where he has a legitimate chance to win something.
All right, one more I got for you before we ask the ultimate question. Top tight end free agent target, if you had to pick one.
It's not really a ton of good ones, are there? I mean, Hunter Henry, I think you want to bring back. Who else is even available? Is there anyone out there? Yeah, Dalton Schultz, maybe. Schultz, maybe.
I think Houston will pay him also, though.
Yeah, who was it that I was shoot, there's someone else available, wasn't there? Isn't there someone else other than Dalton Schultz? I feel like there was another guy because I was like, oh, that guy would be fun here. And I forget who the hell it was, man.
Google's going to think I'm weird because I'm typing in top free, like 24 free agents. Okay, it's giving me a bunch of – oh, there we go, tight ends from PFF. Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry's number two.
Yeah.
Noah Fant, Gerald Everett. Yeah, okay, this is not that good of a class out of
Trotman, no, it isn't.
Austin Hooper.
Yeah, Trotman. Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes. Tight ends.
Yeah, no, there's no, there's no one really out there. So I guess it's probably Schultz. Maybe I was thinking of a guy in the draft, but yeah, I think I wouldn't hate Schultz, but like, how much of an upgrade over Henry is Schultz?
With a good team, he is. But like we've seen it so far to where if he doesn't have a good quarterback behind him, he kind of goes away quietly. But if he has talent around him, like we saw this year with Stroud, he played great. Or the years when Dak was perfectly healthy, he played great as well. I'm just saying it just to put the Dalton Schultz vibes out into the universe if for some reason they can't re-sign Hunter Henry.
Yeah. But
like I said, I think he's one of those guys that he'll stay at. Slowly become a somewhat of a New England lifer, and I say somewhat just because obviously he didn't play his whole career.
Of course, yeah. You know what? The thing about Hunter Henry is it's going to take more money to bring in Dalton Schultz than Hunter Henry, so it's going to be a situation where if that's the case, it's going to be a situation where, you know, Henry just doesn't want to come back, and then you got to throw a bag at, you know, at Dalton Schultz, and it's like that to me is that's a bad – if Hunter Henry doesn't want to come back, that's a bad sign to me. You know, and of course he may want to go somewhere else that has a better quarterback, but like, where are you going to go that's already got a good quarterback that doesn't have a tight end? Right. I don't really know the answer to that question. I mean, he could go to Seattle where Fant is leaving, but like, is Geno Smith really a great quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know where he's going to go that has a legitimately good quarterback right now. And so why not just stay here and be part of the rebuild? If he likes it here, which it kind of seems like he likes it here. So, you know, we'll see.
Last one before we go. Obviously, 6 days away from the big game, Super Bowl 58. I have to ask. I'm doing four podcasts this week, and everyone's giving theirs. Guys, Thursday night, you'll hear me. Last episode before the Super Bowl, that's when I'm giving mine out. But Pat Lane, Sunday night, San Francisco 49ers, Kansas City Chiefs. Do we see back-to-back for the first time in almost 20 years, 19 years to be exact, or do we see San Francisco win their first championship in almost 30 years?
Kansas City's winning. It's not even going to be, in my opinion, it's not even going to be a competition. Now, I will tell you, I have a very strong strategy here. Mm-hmm. It's a very strong strategy. All of my predictions and all of my money are going on Kansas City. All of it. I'm not predicting, I'm not in one spot am I predicting San Fran to win. I will shout it from the rooftops that Kansas City is going to win this game. Listen to me. Now, it doesn't seem like much. I put a $10 bet on the Kansas City money line. I don't ever bet more than like $5. I put a $10 bet on the Kansas City money line. I am so 100% confident that Kansas City is going to win. But here's the thing, and here's the little twist here. I'm totally fine with being wrong. I'm totally fine with losing some money. I got no problem with that because I will be celebrating if Kansas City loses. So I'm not getting in a situation where I'm putting all my hopes and dreams on San Fran. Screw them, dude, because I did the friggin' same thing with Baltimore last weekend. No, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to trust Kyle Shanahan to win a game. Not going to do that. I'm not going to trust Brock Purdy versus, Patrick Mahomes. It's foolish. So instead, I'm going to pick Kansas City. I'm going to bet on Kansas City. I'm going to say Kansas City all week. I've said it for a full week. I'm going to say it for another full week. And then if San Fran wins, I'll be completely happy to be wrong and old takes exposed can come from my ass and everything. And like, great. That's awesome. I'll lose as much money as you want because I'll just be happy that Kansas City didn't win. But I just look at it and think like, I don't see how they don't win. I really don't. I just feel like they're not necessarily, they're a Patriots team. They're the Patriots. They are the new Patriots. They had no business winning that AFC Championship game against the Ravens. The Ravens just like forgot who they were and did something completely different, and they were stupid. And it's like the Bills should have beat them too, but they were dumb and forgot who they were and couldn't play. They couldn't get out of their own damn way. And the same thing's probably going to happen on Sunday with San Fran, where they're going to make stupid mistakes, and Kansas City is just going to sit there and say, "Wow, you're going to be dumb too? Okay, fine, we'll win. We won't make stupid mistakes, and we'll win the game." And so it's like, that's what they become, right? Is that other teams crap their pants when they play them and they end up, making these dumb mistakes. And Kansas City just says, all right, well, hey, we've been here before. We know what we're doing. We're just not going to screw it up and we'll win. And so I'm not putting myself through that again, picking Kansas City to win. And, if they lose, great, but I don't see that happening.
Okay. So with Kansas City winning, I have two more things for you just because they're curious. And I know, everyone's time is precious, but these questions keep coming to me because I like asking them. The first, it's been rumored for a while, but do you think one of either Andy Reid or Travis Kelce, this is their last game of their careers? And the other one, if you have to pick one player to truly be an X factor, and don't go out there going like, Travis Kelce or like Patrick Mahomes, a player that has a James White Super Bowl 51-esque performance, because Patriots fans out there, happy 7th anniversary to the greatest game in NFL history. Just wanted to ask that. Who's a player that you – like if you had to throw a Pat Lane $5 special on to have a great game,
who would it be? Or something like that. Yeah. So I will not – Peter Schrager is incredible. I don't know if you know this or not. Peter Schrager has picked the NFL champion the last five years. And so this year he picked – the Chiefs over the 49ers, which is outrageous. He picked that at the beginning of the year, and he's got Chiefs and 49ers here. So he said last week that he thought it would be that Trent McDuffie would have a pick six. And so, look, he said Nick Bolton was going to have a phenomenal game last year. Was it last year that Nick Bolton had the fumble recovery for a touchdown, right? He said Nick Bolton's going to have a huge game last year. He had a huge game last year. Maybe he's got copies of the script. I don't know, right? But like, I'm going to have to go with Trent McDuffie because, what salt in the wound for Patriots fans to see a guy that they could have had at 22 with traded back to 29 with have a huge game in the Super Bowl. Then again, the funny thing is that if they draft Trent McDuffie, they don't draft Christian Gonzalez, right? And so it's like, that's fine, but then you also have like a legitimate shutdown corner. People are like, who cares? Doesn't matter. Okay, fine. Or whatever, So, but anyways, I think Trent McDuffie is an interesting one. An interesting guy to look at offensively, obviously Travis Kelce, but like Pacheco. I mean, they had a hard time stopping the run. I think if Pacheco can run, it opens up the pass game. And so Pacheco's a guy. And Rashee Rice is the other guy in the passing game that is just – he's been playing really well. But here's the bet right here. You ready?
All right.
Take the over – if you can find it, I don't even know if they'll have it, take the over in receiving yards for MVS. So MVS has made one or two big plays in every game that they've played so far this postseason. And then there's a chance where he's their fifth receiver or whatever it is, but they send him on a deep route. He catches a 30 or 40 yard ball and his over under is probably going to be 25 and a half or something like that. So if you can find it, go with the over on MVS.
Our wonderful friends at DraftKings have the great total -120 over 18.5
yards. And a half. So I told you 18.5. That's crazy. All he has to do is catch one ball. I mean, it's minus money, but still, you know?
Yeah. Throw, because I did this last year and it hit, but I already have a plan of what I'm going to do, because obviously I have all my betting videos I love to do. I'm going to have some single touchdown bettors, just people I think are going to get in the end zone.
Yep.
And yep. I'll do a same game parlay where I do, you know, two things from each side, like two San Francisco players to do X and two Kansas City players to do X.
I like it.
Whether it be their rushing yards or receiving yards, all this other stuff. And then you go from there. I might have to sprinkle the CMC touchdown in there. Why? Because betting it single is
he
just
scores a touchdown in every single game ever. So it's like -400 he's going to score a touchdown. So yeah. It's like...
I would do for if you're going to do it solo, you do first touchdown, if anything.
Yes. Yeah.
But there we have it. Over 18.5 yards at -120, guys. It's a little too hard to pass up on, because on Wednesday night, 2 days from now, will be part two of A Degenerate's Guide to the Super Bowl.
Love
it. We did it last year. We're doing it again this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, Pat, talking Pats with Pat, it's always a fun thing. You kind of get
it is
an opinion of the man who lives and breathes the New England Patriots. And we'll have to do this again soon before the draft. Because why? Because the fun really starts after the Super Bowl gets awarded next Sunday, for as sad as that is, because we're without football for 7 months.
You know, this is the way it goes. It used to be us. It used to be us every year in there, right? I got my Facebook memories that were popping up of, you know, Super Bowl wins and, you know, AFC championship games that I was at and all this other stuff. And unfortunately, that's not us anymore. Now we're watching like 30 other teams that were every year. And so, you know, it just is what it is. And time is cyclical. Unfortunately, it comes for everyone. And so here we are in the downswing, but doesn't mean we can't swing back up someday. You never know.
Exactly. Just hope and pray. And one day we'll be back on top.
That's right. That's right.
But anyway, for all you Swifties out there, join us tomorrow night when Sophie Weller and I give you a little bit of a Taylor Swift Super Bowl fix. But have a good night, and hope you enjoyed episode 278 here on YWC Football Talk. Have a good night.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.